Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to forget about your out-of-pocket costs. That can be a lot of money. But are your bills accurate? It's estimated over 50% of medical bills contain errors. HealthLock can help. HealthLock technology securely connects with your insurance and flags any overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. To save, visit HealthLock.com today.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to Season 50, Episode 5 of Der Daily Zeitgeist for Friday, September 28th, 2018. My name's Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Return of the Jack. Come on, Return of the Jack O'Brien. Return of the Jack. Here I am. You know that I'll be Jack. That is courtesy of Christy Yamaguchi Maine. And I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray!
In the gravy, Miles will sail the seven seas. In the gravy, he'll put the Zeit Gang at ease over this bullshit that we just saw in D.C. I just added all that other shit, but thank you to at Devin J. Size for the, you know, I'm on kind of on a Village People wave right now. Yeah, because I like all the occupations that it represents. So yes, shout out to you, Devin J. Size.
Well, we are thrilled to be joined by two amazing comedians. We got Lil Zam in the house, Ms. Jamie Loftus. What's up?
Everything's going great, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
The world is good.
Women won. We did it. Just kidding. Someone gave me a new AKA. Can I use it?
Yeah.
LeBron Jamie.
Nice.
I like that one. Wow. It's simple but effective.
I like it.
King James.
Queen James.
And we are also thrilled to be joined by Noah Gardenschwartz. What's up, man?
Just came up with my own AKA.
Okay. What it is?
What you know about that.
Oh, what you know about that.
Hey.
What you know about that. What you know about that. I know all about that.
Who built the ark? Noah.
Who built the ark?
Come with the fire
Brother
theme
Noah
songs.
Built the ark. Oh, man, that's the song that I'm more familiar with. Well, great. Noah, before we get to know you a little bit better, you're going to be doing our over-under, and Jamie is third host today. But we just wanted to tell people what we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about that bullshit we all just watched. The Kavanaugh hearing, Dr. Blasey Ford's testimony. And then, appropriately enough, we'll be talking about the Steakums Twitter rant. But that's about it.
Probably the two biggest things in
this. Yeah. The two greatest
Feels
things
like
in
a,
culture
mostly
right now.
The Steakums Twitter.
Natural transition.
Yeah, yeah, we're doing like an hour on the Steakums Twitter.
And yeah, then, well, I mean, like you just said, we already did the bit about how everything's solved now after that weird display.
I mean, everything's fine. Yeah.
So Steakums is a frozen sandwich, guys. I'm not sure if you heard about it.
We'll get into that later. Yeah. Miles will be giving the entire history of it.
I'm so excited to
I'm actually
just can't,
so the
can't hold himself. I thought it was dog food. Myself.
No.
You could have texted me about that. Yeah.
No.
I know every brand.
I know every brand of dog food.
But first, Noah, what is something from your search history that is revealing about who you are?
The two things I searched last night was the Pietà, which I believe is a sculpture by Michelangelo, because I was reading this book called My Name is Asher Lev, and they kept referencing it, and I had never heard of it.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I also had to Google the Rams defense, because I'm playing them in fantasy football tonight, and want to see about Aqib Talib's injury. And so went real highbrow, lowbrow with my search history there.
Well, what is the Pietà? It looks like somebody holding somebody.
Yeah, I believe they're holding Jesus.
Mary holding Jesus. Mary. Yeah. Yeah, Mary holding Jesus' dead body.
Which would explain why I didn't know a lot about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, what's wrong with you?
Huh? You're such a bad Jew.
You're not
Noah.
A fan of my man, JC? Come on, bro.
putting words in my mouth here.
Who else was a Jew? It's Jesus Christ.
My man, JC. Yeah.
What does he say? Was that in Meet the Parents? Like, you're in good company.
Yeah.
Wow. You're in good company,
well,
man.
You know.
JC, yeah.
Wow. And we'll be saying wow for the rest of this episode. What is something you think is overrated, Noah?
Overrated outdoor weddings.
Okay.
Putting it out there. I recently got engaged, and there was a lot of discussion, and that was like the one thing I put my foot down is I am in no way having to worry about rain or bad weather or it being too hot and me and all my groomsmen sweating.
Yes.
So I'm like, there's so little you can control on that day. Let me control the elements.
Right.
Outdoor weddings, overrated.
Do you know what part of the country you might be getting married in?
I know exactly.
Okay.
Denver, Colorado.
Okay.
And so my fiance wanted like a mountain view, and I was like, nope.
Maybe after the wedding.
Yeah.
Right.
We
we'll take photos outside
and like, check. Yeah.
Yeah, the compromise is at the party, I think we're going to have a photo booth with a Red Rocks green screen.
Oh, you
know. The hottest.
That's like a 20% compromise.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. But Dave Matthews is playing the wedding. So,
oh, well, there you go.
Hell no.
I don't think I've ever been at an outdoor wedding where I didn't sweat through at least my shirt, just because they're it's just never. And the one outdoor wedding I've been to in Colorado, I sweat through my whole suit. It was Soren Bowie's wedding.
And also, it's like, I get it. Beaches, mountains, it can all look beautiful, but people act like they've never seen a beach or never seen the mountains.
Right.
You see it for a minute and then it's over.
Yeah, it's funny. Everyone, outdoor wedding, one of the last ones I went to, very hot. One before that, fucking rained.
Right.
And like was like I had to give up my jacket to like so someone else didn't have to get all their hair and shit messed up. And so I ended up with like a soaked dress shirt and jacket. And I was like,
that's what I'm saying. In the history of outdoor weddings, has there ever been anyone that was like, that was a perfect day?
I have been to one. It was amazing, but it was in Guatemala. So maybe it's just America.
I went to one that was almost perfect, except it was too hot during the thing. And also, you have to worry about your groomsmen's taste in sunglasses, because that comes into a factor. And
there
like those are never good. Like you need somebody like Jamie who has like dope
minimal
sunglasses.
Eyewear, hacker eyewear.
Minimalist sunglasses.
So say all that to say I'm team indoor.
When you say that, it makes me think you had a groomsman who had like those Oakley over the top sunglasses that went like literally hugged the top
of your
head.
Well, everybody has to wear sunglasses.
That's the sunglasses of the woman that called the cops on the Oakland barbecue.
Yeah, the wraparound type. Yeah.
And then one dude has the flip up shade. When the bride's coming down the aisle,
exactly. Whoa! It's a Michelob commercial.
The Dwayne Waynes,
Dwayne Waynes.
They're Dwayne Wayne.
What is something you think is underrated?
Underrated Taco Bell bean burritos.
Ooh.
Taco Bell gets a lot of hate.
Had one on the way over here.
The bean burrito, though. Yeah, Taco Bell gets a lot of love on this show, but I don't think enough people have talked about the bean burrito.
That's why it's underrated.
Yeah. It's a vegetarian option, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a vegetarian option. It's inexpensive, but filling. It's not like you never feel gross after eating
one.
That's
true.
Right.
Yeah, because when you start eating that quote-unquote meat.
Right.
Yeah, that's when it gets.
It's when your stomach gets defeated. Did you just wait? Are you vegetarian, or you just did it to avoid the worm meat?
No, I am. I am recently vegetarian, but I grew up in a kosher home, so I wasn't allowed the meat anyway. So I just like grew up on the bean burritos, and I've always loved them. It's like a security blanket for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you say you're recently vegetarian or reasonably vegetarian?
No, recently. In the last 6 months, I went vegetarian.
How you doing, man?
Good.
Yeah.
Doing fine.
You found your fast food item?
Still awake and strong enough to make it to the podcast.
You're acting like you left the cult part of something. They're like,
you look great.
Wait, how you been? Is it all right? Yeah. Is it cool out there? It's fine? It's not scary like the preacher says?
So yeah, at my wedding, it's going to be indoor. We're serving bean burritos. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Bro, I'll bring my own. You know what I mean?
And finally, what is a myth? What's something people think is true that you know to be false?
what I know to be false, people think it's true, is that IKEA will break up couples, or that like IKEA is the instant couple fighter. I actually think IKEA brings couples together.
Wow.
I think it's an awesome place to go with your significant other.
Damn, that's such an optimistic way of looking at it.
Yeah, well, you know, I feel like you should have a shared vision of the space you're trying to create, and on top of that, go get a delicious meal at the cafeteria afterwards.
Wow, you're going to have such a beautiful marriage.
I know.
That's so nice. Yeah. I think there is like a spectrum of ways to react to going. It is a test.
It really
is a test. But it's a passable test.
Yeah, but it's up to you how you respond, because you can get upset and be like, well, then that's it. We hate each other. Or you can be like, well, let's look at why we're mad. And let's try and figure this out.
Well, I'm saying, I don't even understand where the anger and the fighting comes from. We were having a fun-ass time. There's just so many options to go.
I'm picky, and so is my partner, Her Majesty, and we have competing visions for the future. So when we have to go there, it's like a reckoning where we have to reconcile like our very divergent views of like furniture and things like that. So but like I said, it's a test where we then learn to compromise. But I can't say that it's like we walk in there and it's Rainbow City.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm generally indifferent towards most things. So I'm not going to fight tooth and nail over a couch. As long as it's comfortable to sit on, I'll let her pick the color scheme.
Right.
The last time I went to IKEA with someone, it was getting contentious. But then we passed a TV where the Aristocats was playing, and we're like, oh, this is perfect.
That solved everything.
And we watched 20 minutes of the Aristocats, and we're back to one. We'll start again.
Right.
But yeah,
did you go there for anything? But like, we went there for curtains.
We went there. No, we were looking for like a bed frame.
Oh, okay.
And it was another competing visions issue.
See, luckily there though too, like there, it's either like you have when you know your budget, it's easy to make a decision because there's only probably like three things in your budget.
Right. And there's just a lot of reasonable options.
Okay. Right. But it tends to happen in a relationship when things are going up a notch. And I think the reason it has its reputation is because some relationships aren't ready to go up that notch.
This would be a great branded podcast with IKEA. They give us $1,000. Right. We find a couple. We let them do a shopping spree, but we record everything. And then Noah can do like a post-mortem with them. Like, how'd that go? Like, how are you feeling about this?
No, I felt good about that. Yeah. I feel like the few times I've done this podcast, the myth I tried to bust, you guys were kind of on board with. So this is the first one where I felt like I actually...
No,
yes. The grain. You guys felt like IKEA was a fight starter.
Yeah. Well, no, but then you made me look at my own shit and be like, am I just being cynical? And
I'm holding up a mirror, Miles.
Yeah, I know.
Changing minds, changing
the problem is you.
Changing hearts and minds.
And I'm tearing up the divorce papers in my bag after this show. So thank you. We've all learned something.
Yeah.
The nightstand's not worth it, man.
All right, guys, let's talk about the shit show we just watched, Kavanaugh D-Day, as we have it labeled, on our document for the day. Yeah, I don't know. First impressions, what are you guys' thoughts?
Well, I guess for people, let's just give you a recap if somehow you've been living under a fucking rock. So today was a day that Brett Kavanaugh and Christine Blasey Ford were both going to give testimony to the Senate Judiciary Committee where they would talk about her allegations or not. And, you know, like we talked about yesterday's episode, the GOP so bravely chose a woman prosecutor to cross-examine Dr. Ford so they would avoid really having any clips of them that are usable in an attack ad, really, is what that was, because there are no optics of them being like, hey, what did you think? Chuck Grassley, I'm sorry, off top, yo, my man, we have to have term limits. Like, this guy is even Pat, there's a lot of older people in the Senate where you're like,
husks.
Yeah, right.
husks.
Man husks that are just withering in the wind. And you're like, we have moved on and you've stayed fixed.
Like cartoon versions of old men.
Yeah.
They're like the exaggerated cartoon version.
I could have swore Chuck Grassley came off like a dude arguing whether or not he's allowed to take his leftovers from an all-you-can-eat buffet.
Right.
He was like, I paid for this, your Salisbury steak, so I should be able to take it home and this bread.
Right.
Like, it was every now and then he would interject with that.
And he could not, despite the fact that they had it set up so that he would not, you know, interact in any negative way with women. He could not stop interrupting women. It was just nonstop.
Yeah. There was a lot of, I mean, not that, it's just like not a shock. And if anyone is shocked at people interrupting women in any space at any point at this point, it's like fucking grow up. Like, there's no more. I was thinking about this today of like, very rarely, like, people are not really expressing that much surprise at this happening now. Now it's just happening.
Right.
And you make of it what you do. Something that bothered me about the coverage of this story that we were all watching it, the CNN live feed. Mm-hmm. And again, it's like the 24 news hour cycle is treated like fucking ESPN a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But that felt like especially on display today, where there was one point towards the end of the hearing where they like took a 5-minute break and then they cut to like a fucking ESPN table yeah. full of commentators who were all talking. Like, you could have literally switched out Kavanaugh and Ford, or even like men and women, with any two sports teams, and it was indistinguishable.
Right.
And it was just it's so weird and conflicting, where it's like it's this incredibly important moment, but it's also being treated and at some points played for by people I fundamentally agree with as entertainment. And
yeah.
you know, like the even in you know the big theatrical court, you know, people save their headliners for last, and you know, you see Ted Cruz comes out at the very end, and Booker comes out at the very end, and just the whole fucking production of it.
Yeah.
And that was something about Christine Blasey Ford's testimony that I found very compelling, is that I mean, aside from all the brave, horrendous shit she has to relive again for this fucking national stage, just acknowledging that, like, yeah, no one wants to do this. And to an extent, she's being asked to perform
mm-hmm.
for better or worse for everybody and drudge up all this fucking trauma for everybody, that she says at the beginning, like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to be here. And for and like, you know, she doesn't want to perform for people, because
right.
to some extent, every person in that fucking room is performing something. And some of them are performing something I agree with, some of them aren't, but all of them are performing.
Lindsey Graham got his performance.
Oh yeah. my
sure
God.
Everyone
was grandstanding.
She was incredibly compelling and very, very human. It was like an island
yeah.
of humanity in the middle of all this grandstanding and, you know, da-na-na, da-na-na, all right, it's
yeah.
time for the main event. Like, everybody was just really treating it like, you know, and then they would get the, you know, faux solemnity and be like, this is a very serious issue. But, like, it was definitely treated like the fucking Super Bowl of
well, yeah, it's,
politics.
Yeah.
yeah, and even, like, the brevity, like, pundits offer, like, suddenly, like, they have a moment to laugh. It's still kind of shitty when you're really looking at what this situation is. And I feel like even I remember as I watch it and, like, trying to sort of to deflect my own discomfort and, like, embarrassment as a man in a society where this is how women are treated, or just sort of being like, yeah, like, this is fucking shitty. I feel, like, watching it, I just like, this seems like the worst way to actually mediate something like this. But again, it was clearly, like, this partisan dogfight thing where everyone had their combatant in there, and whatever the collateral damage to these people didn't matter, because they like they're playing another game too outside of this, which is for the Republicans, win the culture war, stack the Supreme Court, and the Democrats is just like, let's just try and block as much of this shit we can. And like, I guess these two people happen to be the conduits for that to all go down in. But yeah, it was one of those things too, like, even as you talk about the commentary, people would go in, like, her performance riveting, her
was
performance
used
right.
a lot.
Yeah. His performance, yeah.
And there was like one soundbite that was like, well, as we know historically, the women always lose. And I'm like, you could put in a fucking football team name there.
Right,
like,
right.
What are you?
Wait, who
no,
said that?
Someone on fucking CNN said that.
The
like,
women always lose?
The
yeah.
women, like,
always
not
lose.
Like the Rams or the Bears. Like, it's just
right.
fucking ridiculous the way these stories are covered. I mean, that's not the huge point here, but it was something that stuck out to me, especially on viewing this today. And even, like, you know, like us and the whole world gathered around it like it's a sports
yeah.
game. It's to a degree, it's like it's so important and we all need to be watching, but it's also disturbing the way that we all consume it and the I don't know.
Yeah.
yeah. Well, it's like a cultural Super Bowl Sunday where everyone was like new. People were like taking time out of the day to watch it because it's a very important moment. What Dr. Ford did is very important.
Mm-hmm.
But you think too, like it also, we were reading stories about people who Nick was telling us about, like, you know, women who were watching and brought to tears hearing her testimony.
Yeah.
But they were Trump supporters, and after they kind of wiped their tears away and were like, yeah, but you know what? I still don't think Kavanaugh should still be confirmed. Like, it was, people were still compartmentalizing what was going on to service this like culture war, this zero sum game where they're either the Democrats win or the Republicans win, and that's it.
Yeah.
That's all. They're only looking at it through that prism.
That's a lot of the unfortunate part about it is no matter what happened today, people's minds were made up going into it. And unfortunately, I think we've all grown so cynical to know that, like, it's probably not going to change anything.
Yeah.
I hope it does, but I think if we were all to place bets right now, I would assume his confirmation is going to go through, unfortunately.
I wrote last night just as I was like thinking about what was coming up, and also we were coming off of that Trump press conference where he just like did Trump jazz, like, but like really unhinged and didn't really seem to be coherent for 2 hours. I was like thinking about how people responded, and you clearly saw like everybody who I know was like, what the fuck, this guy is clearly unhinged and a lunatic. But the other side was like, this is why we elected him. And I really do think that we're at this point now where it's not just that like people are, I think we tend to think that the other side sees what we see and they're just like willfully ignoring it or like bluffing and just pretending like something else happened. But I honestly think they legit like see something different. Their brain is absorbing different information.
Well, it is a double-edged sword though, because like a lot of the post conference commentary was talking about how if their performances, for lack of a better word, were flipped and he was really composed and polite and she would have come out belligerent and argumentative and combative, people would have been talking about how horrible it was that she was that way, while a lot of people were also saying the Republicans were relieved at the fact that he came out guns blazing and took a really strong stance. And so it's like exactly what they're saying they liked about the way he approached is exactly what she would have been blamed for had she had taken on that kind of tone.
Oh yeah, it's like Brett Kavanaugh is like too emotional to be elected to the
Supreme
Court.
Look at this hysterical man.
But no one would ever say that.
And that's the other takeaway is I think he's guilty, but regardless of whether he's found guilty or innocent of this, I think the lack of composure he showed at this press conference is an entirely different, less important discussion on why he might not be fit for the Supreme Court.
Yeah. Well, and also there, I forget which Democratic senator brought this up, but there was, it might have been, I don't want to get it wrong, but there was one person who brought it to his attention, you know, with that, like, you know, applying it to his own job of like, if you were looking at this situation objectively, and you think what's happening is okay, you're a bad judge.
Yeah, like you want the best evidence, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was Richard Blumenthal. Yeah.
Yes, it was Blumenthal. And it was like, that was one of the more cogent points I thought made in this entire thing, to him at least, of like, you know, you can deny all you want, but like, you're not even doing good at the job you're supposed to be elected to.
That moment, and when Durbin was calling him out about like basically saying just open yourself up to the FBI investigation, you're saying you're willing to clear your good name and take any necessary measures to do that, will you let on the FBI investigation? That's when he was like as clumsily stumbling over his words and evading questions more at that point than any other point in the
conference. It seems like the two, like each the Democrats and the Republicans had their strategy, and for the Republicans it was just hammer this point in that Dianne Feinstein sat on this allegation till the 0 hour, and then suddenly sprung it on us
at the victim's request.
Yeah, at the 0 hour. That's not fair. Like, what's that about? That's irrelevant. And like
this started the day out like giving her timeline from her perspective, from
Dr.
Blasey Ford's perspective, and it was, you know, she didn't want to come forward. She knew it was going to ruin her life, but she eventually did because, you know, she felt like it was her civic duty, but they kept going back to that idea that, here, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to continue talking about this right when we get back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan, and if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all five of her best-selling products, including the amazing Youth Activating Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing five-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory five-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All of that available at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
And we're back, and so something we talked about heading into on yesterday's episode was that TV is a very volatile, you know, medium that can go in a lot of different ways that aren't necessarily representative of what's happening in the room. Like the people always cite the Nixon versus JFK debate, where supposedly Nixon won, but because he looked like shit.
That motherfucker was ugly.
Because he was ugly and sweaty. People were just like, yeah, fuck that guy.
That is funny.
And Howard Dean's like scream where like in the room, nobody heard it, but because he was like mic'd up, it sounded louder than it was. But anyways, I would just say up front that she was amazingly compelling, like as a witness.
Yeah.
You know, and just, yeah, like we said, came across as human. And he, you know, this was his third try at it. And I do think that if he had had the same, you know, energy that he had had during his hearing, where it was like clear he was like evading and,
right,
you know, sidestepping, that it probably wouldn't have gone well for him, because they needed something. Like if you looked at Fox News after her testimony,
right,
it was literally like looking at the home team's like network when they're getting the shit kicked out of them at halftime. They were just,
what were
like,
they saying?
They were just like, that was not good. That was not good for Republicans. Yeah. She was incredibly believable.
They're down
like,
in the first, yeah, but they're going,
And then, you know, they needed some change, shift in energy. They couldn't just have him come out and say, deny, deny, deny. They needed, like, something.
This
and
fight
he,
back.
Yeah, he came out with this. It was really weird. It was definitely something. Angry and crying.
It's bad. Well, yeah. Off top, he's screaming. So if you just juxtapose to their demeanor as they go through
it. I am having trouble controlling the volume of my voice.
You could just tell that one person was clearly speaking from a sincere place, from their own personal experience, and another person was very defensive and evasive and just could not, you know, like we were saying, if he's truly innocent and you were about to be a Supreme Court justice, I would imagine the demeanor of that person would say, I can't believe I'm here. This is unsubstantiated. I would love to have an investigation done to clear my name. Not, I like beer and right. a feminist texted me. Therefore, I'm innocent. Like, it was all right. this, like, he just went down this list of really lame arguments, like the new, like, I had a friend who was sexually assaulted, therefore, how could I be some kind of predator?
He also really made sure to hit on, what's dude's name's drug history and talking about his addiction.
Oh, Mark
to
Judge.
Basically discredit him if they ever get him to speak.
He fucking came in, like, weak-ass ally attempts blazing. I was personally offended he was wearing a Bechdelcast t-shirt the entire
I know.
The entire, I was like, that, no one's gonna fall for that shit.
Feminist icon.
Yeah, he's wearing a feminist icon t-shirt. I was like,
yeah, pussy
sure.
grabs back hat on.
it was ridiculous. But they're
typical pandering.
The whole, like, tenor of that just sounded like the dying, like, breaths of someone who's drowning and someone who feels like the rules have changed in the middle of the game
right.
for them.
That's what it felt like we were saying. About. Yeah, it was like every time the Republican to speak to him, it was like two toxic bros being like, yo, I'm so sorry about this, man. Like, 2018, huh? That's a fucking fucked up year. Like,
well, it started out with the prosecutor, then they were just immediately like, yo, she's not helping
right.
her
Well, because her line of questioning sort of almost affirmed that there may have been an assault, and then they're like...
Well, and when we're talking Rachel Mitchell.
Yes.
Yeah. When she said to Christine Blasey Ford at the end, you know, like, do you know this that what we're doing is not the best way to address this problem? And it's like... Yeah, I think we are all on some level know, but we're all watching it. So,
it was fun to see. I don't know. I almost took that as her acknowledging, like, almost taking a shot at the Republicans. Like, they're also now, I think she probably felt like, damn, this is even cringy for me because I'm usually prosecuting offenders. And now you're having me cross-examine a victim.
I don't know how the fuck she, I mean, I don't know much about the history of how she got involved in this trial. But what a strange thing to watch, because by the end, it's like she's certainly not helping the team she's there to help, but she's not helping anyone. She's just sort of like wandering around this discussion.
So they wanted to portray this whole thing as a court case so that they could say, well, you haven't proved beyond
and
a reasonable doubt.
And they kept on reiterating, you are not on trial. Right. You are not on trial.
But her rhythm was that of an actual court case where you have all day to... Mm-hmm. You know, cross-examine and examine the witness, and it was just too slow, I think.
And it's more fucking theater that is not necessary.
Right.
Yeah. It was funny hearing the, like, this is, you're not on trial, and repeated to Kavanaugh especially, of, like, you know, this isn't a trial, but, you know, like, it is, the onus is on her to prove that she was raped.
Right.
And, which is, not for everyone, but is pretty common knowledge of that is why it is so hard to get rapists prosecuted because it is so hard to have physical evidence because it's a fucking epidemic. And, you know, 36 years after the fact is not at all unusual.
Yeah.
There was no something that I was really bothering me today was to us and probably all of our listeners, this is very clear, but it wasn't until the past, like, 3 or 4 years there was even language to describe it and people who even sort of wanted to listen. So 36 years ago, anyone expressing, like, oh, well, why is she just bringing it up now? It's like, dude, first of all, there's evidence that it's not the first time she's bringing it up. But also, there were no systems in place that were effective, and there still really aren't, for this to even... happy, like, be taken care of in any which way, where it's like I have an experience like this that happened 5 years ago, and even then, when I was going to my school and going to the city, the police of the city I was living in at the time, this was in 2014, and there was still no clear way, and I had not received any education on if this happens, this is what you do.
Right.
So this is so new of the fact that you would even report this in a public way and expect a result
right.
of some sort. And so the fact that, I don't know, it's I've talked about it with my mom a lot. I'd be interested in because Christine Blasey Ford's my mom's age.
Right.
And my mom, I mean, my mom had an experience like this when she was 18 that she just started talking about like a month ago.
Right.
Because, you know, in the late 70s, people did not talk about this shit. It just didn't happen.
And the way this went down, sorry to jump in. The way this went down is just an example of how we've still not sorted out how to address these issues. Because even in this case where there in the past, there's been protocol, like maybe we investigate, that much. But now we're jumping to conclusions without all the evidence. And again, we're in a situation where we're just leaving it as like, well, we kind of know what we know. And then it's a push or whatever it is.
Right.
I do. First of all, I'm sorry you went through that, Jamie. And I do wonder, because this was such a like triggering, just the testimony and then having, you know, her attacker there just like being so angry and shouting. Like, I do wonder, they say that Anita Hill triggered like the Year of the Woman in the in Congress with a lot of women running for office. I do wonder how much this will have some sort of impact like down the road, especially if he gets confirmed tomorrow morning or if they vote him.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but there's already a record number of women running for.
I think it could.
That's true.
I think it's still not going to be 50-50, though. I mean, I do wonder if there will be like a big.
I hope so. Or at the very least, people. Progress. You'd think that the GOP's brand is like so beyond repair at this point with any rational person, right? With anyone who may have been independent.
You would have thought that for the last 3 years.
I know.
Years.
Exactly. Right. And I get amazed every time. And that could be me just being a little too idealistic. But I think what we saw there, people who clearly are going to believe what they need to believe in the name of self-preservation, and other people were just in a constant state of disgust through the whole
thing. Yeah, not necessarily even in just like from a political standpoint, but like what you're talking about, the fact that there aren't the laws in place, that we don't have the institutions in place to address this sort of thing, really, that not sufficiently at this point, like women will become more involved in the law.
And the fact that an assault case of sorts is still being treated on this circus-like level, to me, is just like more proof positive that people don't know how to handle these situations, because there's no world in which a nationally televised, and the fact that people are, you know, comparing it to the Anita Hill case, which is very, I mean, the parallels are very clear, but it's like, okay, so we're going to deal with this in the exact same way 30 years later. Why have the systems in place not improved or changed at all? They're like the way things happen today. I mean, even the fucking Republican prosecutor said, this is not how justice or truth is, you know, it's just not, and it's not fair to the victim at all, where, you know, Christine Blasey Ford was saying, you know, it's such a difficult decision, and victims ideally should have agency over how they come forward, and she was not afforded that. It was a time crunch, and she had to agonize over the decision. And, you know, even in the movements of the, like last week with the Why I Didn't Report hashtag, where so many women and victims in general were coming forward with their stories, those are such powerful movements that I think open a lot of eyes and does net good for the culture, Migos. but also, I do think that...
The culture and culture too.
Culture too. I'm the fourth Migo. But but in all seriousness, even those hashtags that are so powerful are still putting the responsibility on the victims. Yeah. And it puts the responsibility on us to say, you know, prove that this is something that's been happening by revisiting memories that are very painful, that in all likelihood, if they were reported, were not handled correctly.
Yeah, and that way I think we've regressed, you know? Well, we've come this far and we still do the same thing.
I think there's a lot of value to social activism on social media, like the hashtags. I think they're effective for a lot of people, but at the same time, there is an echo chamber effect where all it's doing is the people who appreciate those hashtags are just reading them and either being triggered or angered by the prevalence of how often you see it or how frequent they are. And the people who could actually learn from them or are in denial about those stories aren't actually paying attention to the hashtag that becomes popular.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. And I guess that that turns sort of into a discussion of like, who are these hashtag movements for necessarily? As like, I don't know, when I tweet out on like a believe victims or believe survivors or why I didn't report or something like that, you know, I'm not necessarily hoping that that gets to someone who disagrees with me or doesn't believe me. It's more of like a community building thing like supporting each other. And you know, hopefully if someone who was maybe on the fence about something like that but knows me and trusts me, that can be a push forward for them.
There's some guys I went to high school with that I need you to talk to for me, just to kind of bring them over, make them more progressive.
That's the thing that I worry, that I wonder about too. Like you say, Noah, like there are people who need to actually confront these kinds of societal problems we have, but there's clearly a version of America where you can operate in this bygone era where you don't have, there is no reckoning still. And I'm curious, like this was a moment you'd think, obviously, it shows how little we've actually moved forward. Mm-hmm. That they could have said, "I'm sorry," like as a like this just on a human level is bullshit or whatever. But clearly, again, there are competing versions, and even like we said, when they were so apologetic to Brett Kavanaugh and things like, "Who's your empathy for?"
Yeah,
you know, and that whole idea is, like, "Yeah, I can't believe they're changing. They're calling fouls now." All of a sudden,
there's a great New York Times opinion piece about how America has a empathy issue where we only feel sympathy for powerful men, and like if a president gets like assassinated or brought down by scandal, then we really empathize with them. But because that's like, we're a misogynist culture that, you know, when you look at the movies, the people we put in the main character who we're supposed to identify with are tend to be men, you know?
Fucking so. Don Drapers and shit,
right?
There, I have one more thing to say about how the pressures on victims to come forward and say shit is, I mean, the idea, I was talking about this with a friend of mine the other day where we were sort of revisiting, you know, it's almost been a year since the Me Too movement and so much has moved forward and so much has absolutely not. And we were just talking about like how having to do this over and over and over because like is like, okay, so we just have to fucking dust off our like rape trauma every fall,
right?
And like compose another fucking thing every fall to remind people, like, but that is how this movement is working. And every victim has a, you know, it's every situation is so unique. And I think for me, especially towards the beginning of working through that trauma, social media was helpful, and it felt like one of the only places where I could speak for myself and not feel like, you know, things were muddled and horrible. But you know, it, I feel like in the couple of years since I've started talking, I've been, you know, talking about it for 3 years or so. But even in that time, the expectation, I feel like there's almost an expectation that you have to talk about it now, not like this is an option that's available to you where you sort of have autonomy over what you say. Fuck that.
Well, that was something I struggled with during the everything that happened today. Is I was on Twitter, you know, as a comedian, my feed is just full of comedians, and so many, like, I understand trying to bring levity to a difficult situation. That's at the heart of what we do. That's so important. But at the same time, there's so many people that were clearly taking today as an opportunity to just try to craft the perfect joke without offending, but still really kind of making a joke. And at the end of the day, it was like very clear that their objective today was not to understand or not to listen or to form an opinion, but just to make sure that they got 3,000 retweets.
Right.
And like that entire culture within the comedy community is so gross to me. And so it's also like, I know there's a lot of people looking at certain people's social media feeds, like, how are they not saying anything? Why wouldn't, and it's like, I left this entire thing alone because I didn't want to take part in that circus of like making sure that you're crafting the perfect joke about, even if you're shitting on Kavanaugh, you know, it's like, just watch it and and formulate a thought
I'm
before
100% you're totally guilty agree. Of that. And I think part of it too, at least for me personally, was I've, you know, there is such a level of frustration that I have looking at this and many other aspects of what's going on with like the government that was a definitely a way for like to awkwardly deal with my discomfort in a way that is a way that I've expressed that just historically as a person. But yeah, I totally agree. Like part of it too, I'm just like, as I was saying to Jamie too, is like, there's still this, yeah, that we, there's a spectacle version where I'm, and that's sort of how I've been inundated with media too, that, you know, there's, I can see it for what it is. And then there's a layer I can step back from and I go, and this is a thing to comment on too.
Yeah.
And it's not, I guess just for my own comfort, can selectively engage with certain elements of that. Like one is to actually talk about the merits of what is actually happening. The other is the spectacle of it, because on part of it is seeing how shamelessly people on the right, sometimes on the left, are like using this for just fodder or talking points. Right. And then sometimes it's a commentary on that. And other times it's trying to call people on their bullshit. But yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think there is this, I was having to reconcile the urge to like say something or call something out, but in a way that I don't have to live with how shitty and dark the actual situation is.
Right.
Yeah. I think that that's like a great point in general. No, I tried, I mean, like you were saying, Maz, I have engaged in upsetting public events like this a bunch of times. And yeah. It's like so fucked up to be like, how would who I am on the internet interact with this disturbing
yeah, right.
social? But I think that that right. is something that a lot of people are subconsciously thinking, kind of like what you were saying.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, I tried to log the fuck out mostly today, but I still, you know, fired off a tweet or two. And it is like, I don't know.
It's
I
weird. Mean, no, it feels.
I mean,
it's,
I'm not trying to pass judgment on people.
No.
But well, the other thing is like, what happened today would be well within the realm of things that you regularly comment on. So it's like,
yeah.
If I was going to your Twitter feed, I would expect you to be speaking about it, whether it was through jokes or not. But it's when people who obviously had zero interest in this before today suddenly hop on the bandwagon of like, all right, there's a lot of eyes on Twitter and this is an opportunity for me to get shit seen. You know, it's like if this is what you actively engage in consistently, then that's part of your brand, for lack of a better word, then by all means, that's what you should be talking about. But
sure.
But if it's just like every single big social event becomes an opportunity for you to craft the perfect joke without paying attention to what's actually happening, that's when it gets annoying.
Yeah, no, I mean, I feel just like personally that I'm not above scrutiny, even when it's an issue that I care about. And even, I don't know, even firing off a tweet or two today, I was like, did you need to? I don't know. Something that I wanted everyone's opinion on, I guess, because I don't know where I fall in it, was I was still like, I opened my Twitter feed a couple times, even though I didn't engage that much. There is a lot of the fucking like memes of Kavanaugh looking ugly and then adding shit like that. That is so normalized now of like, this is just what we do. And I don't know. I think maybe it's a personal preference, but I'm fucking over it. For whether I agree with them or not, seeing an unflattering picture of someone and that I don't know.
So there were a couple examples of that.
There are enough things to attack him over.
There are a couple examples of that where there were a couple pictures or like memes where he was frozen in the midst of this like nose wrinkle thing that he was doing over and over again
that seemed
to me like a tell, like that he was almost like had a facial twitch whenever he was lying or like
fighting something back.
Yeah, fighting something back. And so I was okay with like getting a freeze frame of like that because it did seem to, I don't know, capture something about his performance.
That was his twisting the Oreo.
Right. That was his twisting the Oreo. And then there was also a picture where he was like enraged talking. And there's a photograph with like you see the six women behind him and they're all just like looking at him like with the most just complete disgust. I thought that was a great picture, but I agree. Like just anything where it's so transparently like, adoy, look at this dummy. It's like, yeah, that's probably not.
And then connecting back to Noah's point of like doing it kind of for like the clout and the retweets that will accompany saying that, I don't know. It's maybe I'm either old or just too tired.
You are old.
I'm extremely elderly. I don't know. I'm getting tired.
No, I think this was this is a very, I think, exhausting day on
this
every level for
day.
Many people in many different ways. And like you said, we're in here feeling fucked up. We're like, I'm making jokes because I'm looking at somebody who looks, his guilt is so apparent to
me.
And we're just acting like this is okay. That this guy, every time there was a question asked that like would have really, like a line of questioning would have taken us somewhere that may have gone somewhere significant, he sidesteps or starts arguing with senators and things like that. And you're like, this is just how we're going to let this rock.
I want to focus on his performance, but first we're going to take a quick break.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all 5 of her best-selling products, including the amazing Youth Activating Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing 5-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory 5-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All of that available at meaningfulbeauty.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And we're back. And I mean, I think across the board, people found Dr. Blasey Ford's testimony very credible. That's why Fox News looked like they were mourning someone's death after her testimony, because
the Fox and Friends flag was at half mast.
Yeah, exactly. They were really worried.
Even to that absurdity, right? The sadness wasn't over that this person may have been sexually assaulted by this judicial nominee.
No, absolutely not.
It was that. Yeah, it
was
that.
They're about to lose a seat.
And then you're just like, what the? And then that's that other layer where I'm trying to have a look, we're not even engaging with this.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm sorry.
But I think the question is going to be him, or at least the difference is going to be in how we interpret his, because I think from the right's perspective, he seemed to channel this white male anger that increasingly is the only way that like white men can feel alive anymore. I feel like that's just culturally on the right. That's like what they need to like just get involved in a thing. And on from my perspective, it just seemed so transparently, weirdly like a guilty guy raising his voice because he wants you to stop calling out that he's lying. And I mean, the main issue that I wanted addressed is somebody pointed out that all of these character testimonies from his first hearing, all you had to do is go back and say, okay, have you ever hung out with him when he was drunk? Have you ever hung out with him when he was drunk? And they did go to his drinking a few times, but nobody ever was like, are you a bad drunk, basically? And he reflects it. He had this weird reflexive response to any time his drinking got brought up, where he talked about drinking beer. And someone, God bless the internet, did a supercut of just all of his.
Is it auto-tuned?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not. But we will work on that.
But just and so the way he was using the sort of idea of having a few beers with like binge drinking and acting like an absolute monster.
It's literally
like, having beers.
It's the same. It's along the same lines of as locker room talk. Yeah. It's just like this is a coded phrase for males being abusive towards other people.
Having beers and using alcohol as a rationale.
Right. I mean, literally locker room talk in the sense that he was like, I worked my tail off multiple times. It's like, what are you, my fucking gym teacher? Like, worked your tail off?
That whole part really resonated with me. And like, I got great grades, had a job, played basketball in college, and I was a fucking monster. Like, I only wanted to party and try to hook up. Like, I was never assaulting anyone. But like, the fact that he thinks because he worked hard and got good grades and played sports meant that he wasn't some kind of shitty teenage boy.
Yeah.
It's like, all I wanted to do was party, and I did all those things.
Yeah, but let's hear him talk about having a couple beers.
So many beers.
I drank beer with my friends. Sometimes I had too many beers. I liked beer. I still like beer. Had beers, have some beers. One beer, drink beer, drinks beer, drank beer and drinking beer.
You've probably had beers, Senator.
Beach Week Ralph Club biggest contributor.
You know, I got a weak stomach, whether it's with beer. I like
you
beer.
You haven't answered that.
I like beer. I don't know if you do.
Okay.
Do you like beer, Senator?
What?
You like to
none of this is repeated.
Hanging out and having some beers with friends, which I gladly do and which I fully embrace.
Having beers with friends.
What a cool guy.
Yeah, and it was that, like, and it was through that when people were talking about his drinking, too, like you said, that he would get testy. And when Amy Klobuchar was asking him about, you know, has he ever lost his memory or, like, had a, you know, lost
blacked
track
out,
of time from drinking, blacked out, basically, he straight up chest passed the ball right back to her, like, well, but anyway,
have
listen
you?
To it. Yeah, him just getting really.
You ever had beer?
Really disrespectful to a senator.
So you're saying there's never been a case where you drank so much that you didn't remember what happened the night before or part of what happened?
That's you're asking about, blackout. I don't know. Have you?
What?
Yeah.
Could you answer the question?
He stuttered and then said, I don't know you.
That's not happened. Is that your answer?
Yeah, and I'm curious if you have.
And then he doubles the fuck
no
down.
Yeah, nor do I.
Okay.
Yo, that.
I mean, he's grasping at straws here. It's just, and especially because the senator also referenced the fact that she had a
alcoholic parent.
Who, which is like the most, and thankfully she was able to speak to that later and be like, hey, just so you know, the children of alcoholics tend to be pretty fucking careful about how they treat beer.
Yeah,
like, you
having
know.
A beer.
Very, very unimportant side note, but was anyone else surprised to learn that the drinking age used to be 18?
That was an interesting moment.
Yeah, no, I
know.
Knew that because I went to
Mr.
school in D.C. and the drinking age for like as recently as like the late 80s was 18 and just everybody could drink. So there were like there was lore of those days when freshmen could.
It was
get
interesting.
Drunk.
I mean, a lot of this has been kind of like bringing back up kind of the insurrection of like frat culture and how I mean, it goes without saying that all male prep schools of any grade level should be burned to the ground, along with the culture that comes with it. But it's interesting to hear that. I don't know. It's weird. I feel like that specific section of like problematic male culture has kind of like fallen out of discussion for a while. And now it's back, baby.
Yeah.
I went on a fucking I fell in a hole last night of. Tucker Max. Does everyone remember Tucker Max?
Jesus
I hope
Christ.
They
serve
beer
in hell.
Beers, couple beers.
In my head, I'm like, that book has to be 20 years old. It is not. It is 10 years old.
Right.
That book came out
really?
In 2006 was the top book in the country for like over a year, and I think today it could not even be published. It's just so like the, using right. that as a marker of like how quickly things have, you know, changed in terms of political climate. That book would struggle so hard to find a fucking publisher, to the point where Tucker Max, this is just a fun fact that I think is insane. Tucker Max now has to work as a ghostwriter. And he ghost wrote Tiffany Haddish's memoir last year.
He did?
Wow. He did.
Wow. Wait, but, really? But that is what's so fascinating is you're talking about like only in 10 years did a certain kind of book become unpublishable because it's socially unacceptable, and yet 30 years between Anita Hill to today, the same old process is happening.
Exactly.
So it's like certain things are improving at a rapid rate while other things, and unfortunately the more important institutions, are just staying the same.
Yeah, we're doing the easy shit first. It's like, it's easy to not publish a book. It's easy to say, don't do this kind of movie or whatever. It's harder to then look and start holding people truly accountable in like a, in more, you know, I think, substantial ways too.
Yeah, because not, I mean, it just is like, like not enough people with money or influence give a fuck.
Yeah. Right.
That's it.
I mean, just lingering things that we haven't touched on. There was his raising the idea that it was a Clinton based revenge conspiracy.
Revenge on behalf of the Clintons.
That was what he opened with.
Right. That was in his opening statement. And it was just weird. His opening statement was weird because of how angry it was. But then also he would choke up and cry, which like not above it. I cry literally all the time. But he choked up at the weirdest times. Like he started choking up when he was talking about his calendar, which was like
his dad taught him about the calendar.
It was somehow connected to his dad. But then he started talking about workouts, like workouts at his friend's house.
Tobin.
And with
Tobin's
house. He started crying about that too. It was like workouts and calendars were the things
he got choked up talking about how he bought a bunch of baseball tickets once. He's like, man, we'll go to the baseball game. It was so fun with all my friends. He was like, oh.
Also, how is this whole calendar thing not the most evident proof that this dude is American Psycho? That's nuts.
Had a few skis with the boys.
Right.
What was his?
It's like lifting.
I will say, what was his one boy's nickname? Quee.
Squee.
Yeah. That was the only part of his testimony I liked. I was like, that's actually a kind of cool nickname.
Squee. Where's the homie Squee? What's Squee's story?
What's Squee up to now?
Oh, fuck. The fucking whole virgin with a calendar narrative really made me very tired.
Again, I think even just his idea that he would entertain this idea that it was a Clinton orchestrated hit job, or like even raising the specter of George Soros, like with the GOP, like who paid for the polygraph test? Clearly, he's even too partisan to even be a judge, regardless of how this goes. So there are many things that objectively you'd be like, based on temperament or partisanship or what, you're going to have a dude step onto the Supreme Court with clenched fists looking at Democrats or people on the left? That is, you're not going to get anything remotely close to an impartial judge with an attitude like that.
Which is probably a pro for Republicans,
of course,
right?
Yeah, they want a fucking attack dog on that side. One thing I'll just say is as we look around at how this vote could happen at this point, you know, as we record this, we just watched the testimony and everything now.
Right.
So when you hear this tomorrow.
All right, you got us. It's Thursday.
Yeah, well, we had to. It was late breaking. It was late. Right. We had to be on top of this.
It's Thursday night.
But, you know, if, you know, right now they're still scheduled to have a vote to get him out of committee at 9:30 D.C. time. And we'll see how that goes. I mean, people were reporting that Jeff Flake just huddled up with Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins and Joe Manchin, like right off to the side in the Senate building,
who
for
are
whatever
like
reason.
The most on the bubble.
On the bubble people. And like, if Jeff Flake moves tomorrow, this thing could change very differently. So I don't know. It's very clearly it was a very big day, but we'll see what happens. I'm hoping that, I just hope that people do the right thing. Jesus.
Right. And I'll be interested to see how people who are watching TV respond to this. Like what? Because he is already a historically unpopular candidate for the Supreme Court, and I can't imagine that he's going to be more popular after today.
Hey, the bright side is If they don't end up putting him in the Supreme Court, I bet they'll find someone really nice to put in instead.
Yeah.
I bet someone awesome with progressive views will be put in there. Yeah, right.
The devil you know.
Yeah.
It'll be a constitution in a wig or something. Like, this person's fine.
She'll actually just be Tucker Max.
Jamie, quick thoughts on the Steakums. Go, because we probably can't cover it.
Okay, here's the thing. The Steakum thing, you were the one who brought it to my attention. You did a great dramatic reading of it. I was like, oh, shit, I'm connecting with this. Wow, isolation in the digital age. Oh, fuck. Oh, shit. And then I had, you know, I went to pee and then I came back and I'm like, you know what? If you read it in a less compelling way than you did, that's a fucking monologue from Mr. Robot. That's a cutscene from Fight Club, dude. He was like, in this, like, imagine Edward Norton mumbling the Steakums account and it loses its luster entirely.
Right.
Where he's like, I can't believe these kids, they're isolated. They got mental illness. So, of course, they start to connect with corporate accounts. They turn to the thing that wants to kill them and starts to connect with it, connect with each other because of the computers.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I think we had to get to that one really quick, but I know we got to wrap
this up. It's like this. I mean, we got to say what happened, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, the long short of it, yeah. The Steakums account.
Twitter account just went on this like nihilist rant about.
Which I guess they've been doing for a while.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they
finally one caught on with everybody.
Mm. Yeah. It was just about how young people sandwiches. Are vapid and our culture is dead and everything sucks. It was very Russ Cole from first season of True Detective. Yeah.
You know who would never tweet nihilistic shit?
Who's that?
Taco Bell bean burritos.
Yeah,
that's right.
They would just fucking hawk the product. I thought it was an interesting thing, but ultimately, that is great promotion for a shitty product. Just keep that in mind when you're, I don't know, fucking your box of Steakums later.
Is there a dog food that sounds like Steakums? I'm just
Begging strips.
Maybe that's Begin. What it is.
Begging.
All right, Noah, Jamie, thank you guys so much for living through this exhausting day with us and reacting to it with us. Noah, where can people find you, follow you?
At Noah G Comedy on Instagram and Twitter, noahgcomedy.com website.
Good choice of handles. Is there a tweet that you've been enjoying?
No.
All right.
I'm going to go check out the Steakums after this. Though.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray. And yeah, tweets, you know, let's
get
anything, anything.
Okay.
Steakums, just check the Steakums thing.
Young people today have it the best and the worst. There's so much to process and very few trusted.
It's like, yo, shut up, guy. Just got back from his first semester of college.
Also, V for Vendetta. That's the other thing. Yeah. If we can find a bunch of V words in here, it gets annoying very fast.
Right. Jamie, where can people find you, follow you?
You can find me on Twitter at JamieLoftisHelp, Instagram at JamieChristSuperstar. But honestly, today, just fucking take a walk and, text your mom and see if she's okay.
Yeah. One of my, a tweet that I was enjoying today was from the great Megan Amram, and she tweeted at 11 a.m., want to feel old? Today started 62 years ago. You can follow me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien. You can follow us at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes. We link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as the song we ride out on. Miles, what's that going to be?
We're going to go out on a song by Knox Fortune called Lil Thing. And I like the little detuned synthesizers in here, but I think you'll like it too. Got a good hook. Enjoy that.
The footnotes are also in the information about the episode that you're listening to. So just click on the I here or on whatever app you are listening to it on. That's going to do it for today. We will be back on Monday with more podcasts, and we hope you have a good weekend.
Bye.
We drank beer and still do. So whatever. We'll be right back.
Zeit gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.